it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, here we are, a dinner table in-person edition of Advantage Connors. Finally, I didn't make it up last week, but here I am with you today. How are you, Pops?
Well, what happened? Your car wasn't working? What happened to get you up here so late?
Yeah.
You took it in and everything's working good, but it's good to have you up here. We had a great dinner tonight. Your mom cooked pork chops and vegetables and potatoes and
mini pork chops.
Which were the best. But we're sitting here in person for me, it's a lot better because I love looking at you and being able to talk to you face to face because, I can see your expression with what I say and vice versa. And kind of makes me feel a little more comfortable when you're sitting next to me. So glad you're here.
Yep. A little more connected. I like it too. Wanted to drive up. It's been raining. We went again. I know. A lot of rain going on. We can always use it, but it has been a rainy winter here in California, which kind of gets in the way of the golf and the tennis games.
It did, but I got my tennis in this morning in the drizzles.
Yeah.
I went out and it was drizzling lightly and I called my buddy Richie, who has been on our podcast, and I said, meet me over there. Get over there in a hurry. I said, we can get 30, 40 minutes in. And we walked up and he says, oh, I don't know. They're not going to let us play. And I said, I played at the French and heavier than this. And he goes, what tournament's that?
Right. What's that?
Yeah. So I got my 30, 40 minutes of tennis in and then chipped and putted a few in the rain. And then, it's tough for me to sit around all day inside and not be able to get up and go hit balls, like we did yesterday at our friend's place. And, tell our listeners about that. That was pretty cool.
Well, that was interesting. I didn't know about this. This was new to me. You came in, you're like, you want to go hit some balls. And I'm like, well, isn't it too wet? And it's been raining. Is the range even open? And you're like, oh, we're not going to the range. We're going over to my buddy's house down the street. And I'm like, all right. So we drive down the street, pull into your buddy's quote unquote house through his gate.
Right.
And he's got a rather large house there on the mountain there. And below his house is a full-sized polo field.
Yeah.
For horses, like polo, like the shirts, the collared shirts. So full-size polo field, but he has it set up. He has like a little chipping green, a little bunker. Mm-hmm. And then he has essentially like a range. So when they're not playing polo on it, it's a full-on range. He's got markers at 50, 100, 150, 200. He's got a couple little nets. And he's got his shed. That was my favorite part.
Right.
It was the little shed he has where you go, it's got the lock on, you unlock it, and it's got bags and sets of clubs on the wall going back like the last like five or six generations. You can see this Callaway, that Callaway, the next Callaway, the Warbirds, everything on the wall and all the equipment.
2,500 balls.
Right.
Yeah, that was, there's baskets and baskets and baskets of balls. But, the good thing is we can practice our chipping, we can practice our putting, we can practice, anything and everything. But at the end,
got to pick them up.
We got to pick them up.
So you don't want to be spraying.
That's the criteria, So everything's got to be in a certain range. You don't want to be walking all over the place. But it's pretty much fun to go over there and have nobody around and work on your game and know what you want to do. I mean, when I'm on that range, I feel like I can try different things and not have people looking at me and. If I give it that S word, I can't remember that word. Don't say it.
Okay, I won't.
Don't say it. That one that goes to the right.
Rhymes with wank.
Yeah, because I'm trying something to try to get better. And, whether I'm trying to fade one or or draw one or hit a high cut or mm-hmm. or whatever, that if people aren't looking to go and say, look, he sucks. But it's so much fun. And a shout out to Pat Nesbitt, who allows us to go on there. And, thanks for letting us come over and use your place. Great fun.
Yeah, I was surprised at how narrow our range was of balls, because there's not greens. It's just literally like a stake out there. And then, that's 150, that's 200. We weren't that wide. There wasn't, some were left. That's me with the power draw, you know?
Yep.
But I was surprised how, it was pretty good. I was kind of proud of us. Not having greens out there made it almost easier in a way.
And it makes it easier to pick them up.
Right.
We can find them, but... we go out there and it's just so peaceful and quiet. Mm-hmm. I mean, the view is magnificent. His property is beautiful, but you overlook the ocean also.
Yeah.
And the peacefulness. And
I thought there'd be like some sort of mini like golf Zamboni to help us pick the balls up. No.
I think that's up to us to get that next time.
we were old school with just the little pickers.
Yep.
Where you individually pick up each ball. We had one in each hand, and it actually only took us about 5 minutes to clean up a couple hundred balls.
Yeah, it was great. It was so much fun. With all the rain we've had here in California, the courses have been closed and then only open to walking. And, mm-hmm. It's difficult for me to walk the courses with the hips. The golf the last six, seven weeks have been, cut to a minimum. And, mm-hmm. and to be able to go out and hit on the range like that was pretty much fun. So,
yeah.
So as long as I can get a little golf and a little tennis in every day, I'm a happy guy.
Pat's going to be seeing a little more of us, I think, in the future.
I'm thinking
be
so.
Careful.
And I don't think he minds. So I think
have to get him out there and hit something with us. Yeah, well, here's a story, since we're talking a little golf, that we texted about earlier in the week that kind of funny, because we've been talking for 2 years now almost about LIV in golf, Saudi Arabia, the money they've invested and starting the competitive tour to the PGA. And there was a quote that came out that got a lot of attention that we were talking. I thought it was pretty funny, like how much the tune has changed these last year, 18 months, 2 years mm-hmm. since we started talking about it. Did you see this? The Paul Azinger quote, who does a lot of the TV for the PGA, quoted this, the best players aren't all playing PGA tournaments anymore. That's over. Suddenly the LIV tour, let's just say it's like this, the PGA has become the qualifier for LIV, and it's a sad day for golf.
Interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you go out and you try to earn a reputation on the PGA Tour so that the LIV Tour invites you and gives you...
Notices you.
Yeah, and gives you millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
I often think of that, Brett, and where would I stand if that was me, back in the 70s when I first came up and I was out trying to make my reputation and chasing a dollar. Mm-hmm. And now these guys chase millions of dollars. I was literally chasing a dollar. and where would I stand if somebody ever came up to me and said, I'll give you $300 million.
Right, to come play golf.
Yeah, it wouldn't. My hand would have been
quick draw McGraw.
because I realize what happens, and maybe not as much in golf as it does in tennis. Because in tennis, and I've always said this, if you can't sell out a 25-seat stadium and you're not winning major tournaments, it's almost like bye. Mm-hmm. Move aside. The next guy's coming up. And, that's right. That's rightfully so. It's rightfully so in every sport.
Mm-hmm.
But golf is a little different because they really honor their past greats. Sam Snead or Hogan or, Nicklaus and Palmer. And they really hold them on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Tennis is a little bit different than that. But if that was me, boy, oh boy, I mean, how can you not... feel that, Christ almighty, I paid my dues.
Right.
A lot of the guys have paid their dues. John Rahm paid his dues. He won a number of majors and how many other tournaments, mm-hmm. Not only on the PGA, but around the world. Why not benefit from that? But here's what's going to happen. People are going to say, we got to do it for the love of the sport. you owe this to the game. Listen, I played for over 20 years, and I realized two things. One, the game doesn't owe me anything. And two, I don't owe the game anything. And I don't say that disrespectfully, because I gave the game everything every time I walked out there. I left my blood and my DNA on that court, you know, and tried to bring in fans and television and sponsors and, you know, just like Borg and just like Mac and just like Lindell and just like Panada and just like Sampras and just like, you know, all the guys that, you know, have played up to this point, Federer and Nadal and Djokovic and Murray and now the guys that are taking over. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we benefit from the game. Of course we do. I made a living off of it and, you know, have a great life off of it, but that doesn't mean that they, because I did that, they don't owe me anything.
Well, it's still just a business.
It is a business. Exactly.
As much as they owe this and they think that and owe this, it's like, they're not going to keep you around unless you're making cuts.
Right.
You know, and if you're not making cuts, you're not going to be able to
selling tickets
to support
whatever.
Your family. I mean, you're at the end of the day, they're there to make money and you're there to make money because you're a professional golfer. It's what you do for a living.
Or tennis player.
Or tennis, yeah, whatever it is.
I talk golf and tennis because it's
similar.
Individual sports.
Right.
You know, the old saying, you're only as good as your last match, or your last win or whatever.
Your last round.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
It seems like it's in this weird like time where we're trying to figure it all out. If you fast forward like 5 years, there'll probably be some combo league or they'll figure something.
Yeah.
But it is a little interesting to watch because I saw, you know, some every week on Twitter, there's all the people who hate LIV. You know, there's like the PGA people who hate it. They rip on the 3 days. They rip on the music. They rip on, you know, the people. There's not a lot of people in the stands. And some of that I get. Like I get, there was Rahm. He's hit, you know, he's contending on the weekend or whatever. And he's hitting a shot into a green. And there's like no one in the green, you know.
Right.
There's like no fans. And here's one of the best players in the world, you know. And he's out there and he's doing his thing. And every, you know, the check's getting cashed and they're happy and all that stuff. But
he's still trying to be the best he can be.
Yeah, yeah. I get that. But it just feels like they need to figure out a way to where we can, I don't know, come together or something to where everyone's together. Like he's saying, it isn't like this, you know, junior league or this qualifying league to get to LIV. And then LIV, like the still almost like the best competitions are on the PGA and the majors.
Yeah,
those are the ones you tune into and watch. How many back is he going into Sunday? And with LIV, they're not at that point
yet. But that's history. You know, you're watching the Masters and you're watching the US Open and you're watching the PGA and all that because that's history. You know, and what it's meant,
right?
You know, to get to this position. And I mean, you know, going back on the PGA, I mean, they still have, you know, so many great players, mm-hmm. you know, on that tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what's their thought process? You know, what are they trying to do? Are they going to stay there and continue? Or, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not, you know, trying to make a prediction on who's going to go where or when or whatever, but
yeah.
You know, Rahm leaving, you know, that's
I mean, they're poaching a lot of big names.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
yeah,
that's
they're
the
grabbing
thing.
A lot of big names is right.
Is the guys they end up like grabbing are guys who have like, they had, like you said, have had to prove themselves and make their resume by winning a slam or multiple tournaments or whatever it is. So it's just weird because, well, what are you supposed to do? Like, how's a young guy supposed to look at it? Where like, I can make this guaranteed chunk of money if I go, or if not, I'm here on this tour, which is, you're even calling it a qualifier tour.
Right.
So, you know, it seems like this is in this weird time.
I wonder if Azinger will get a little shtick for that.
From the PGA, yeah.
For saying that.
Right.
I mean, I look at the players that they have with, you know, but I look at it and I say, who's next?
But you saying that Azinger, if offered $300 million back in the day, would have been like, no.
Well, that's a good question, isn't it?
I have to uphold the PGA's honor, you know, like,
so
I don't
guess
know.
The question is, who's next?
Yeah. It feels like Rory's just sitting there waiting to get offered. I mean, they probably already talked about it, right? But like, he's the guy who stood up and then almost like, well, kind of lost out on this opportunity because he stood up for the PGA.
Yeah.
You know, and then what's that, you know, have they been able to reward him? Sure. I'm sure they've done stuff and created these special events and stuff where he's, you know, been the star and everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, he must be looking at it like, damn, like I could get $500-700 million just to go play.
Yeah, but $700 million ain't what it used to be.
What do you mean? Inflation's down.
Yeah, inflation's down. That's right.
But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where like they're going to have to find some sort of middle ground or some coming together, you'd think, just because it does seem like there's this split. And then there's all this talk about the Niemanen, you know, with the ranking. He's won three times or in the last 3 months, he's won an event on Live, but he's only ranked like 70 in the world or something like that. I don't know exactly what it is. Or like Kepka's like 30, Mm-hmm. You're telling me Kepka's like the 30th ranked guy. He won a slam last year. Yeah. You know, it's just weird because they don't know what to do. It's like this old like system and then this new thing coming along and they're trying to kind of mesh together. And
be interesting to see where they go and how they figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and how they get, you know, try to get everybody back to playing together and for what, you know, and what it means.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. The future.
Right. And then the more the Saudi money comes into other sports, like we were talking last week with tennis, you know, it's just going to become more normalized and, you know, I'm sure it'll become not as such a big deal the more people are used to LIV being part of the conversation.
I hope I last long enough to see the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, on all of it. I hope I'm still
You
there.
Will. I think so. I don't think it'll be that long. They got to figure it out at some point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Sooner than later.
Yep. All right, here's a question from somebody who should have been on the pod with us. We tried to get him up here. He's in LA.
Yeah.
He's a recurring guest, multiple time guest on the show, Spencer Segura.
Mm-hmm.
Your buddy, best buddy.
Yep.
Blew us off.
Yeah, well.
We offered.
It was a last minute
call.
To get him up here. It would have been great to have him.
We offered him mini pork chops.
Yeah, and dinner.
And a seat on Advantage Connors. And he couldn't pull himself away. He's got some commitments tomorrow, I understand, but we miss him. We'll get him on here soon. Here's a question I think that I was going to ask him and you if he came up, but I think it's a good lead into what's going on in the desert. Indian Wells about to start. Mm-hmm. It has probably started right today with some of the early rounds. How has Indian Wells changed since, you know, when did you first play? How has it changed? Now, I know it's been in multiple different locations and stuff. And, you know, like it's still one of the funnest events. We're not going to go this year. Don't want to maybe deal with all that stuff going on. So we're just going to take the year off.
I don't want to go have to beg for a ticket again, you know, down there and go through all that. But you know, Indian Wells, you know, geez, started back. I started playing there in the 70s before it even was at
La Quinta,
you know, back when, geez, I'm trying to think where they had one of the major ladies golf tour events, the Dinah Shore. That's where it was at the very beginning when I first started playing. The growth, I mean, you know, back then it was makeshift stands and, you know, a center court and maybe one or two other courts to, you know, to have the players play and to, you know, be a part of it. But, you know, it was part of a little circuit here in California because we played LA, we played San Francisco, we played the desert, and then we played in Las Vegas. So it was a nice little 3 or 4 week tour if you wanted to play it. But man, has it grown. I mean, from there we went to La Quinta, which was a great venue. Mission Hills is right.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it was a great event then. And then we went to La Quinta and, you know, we went from, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 to 10,000 or 12,000 seats and, you know, at a great spot and, you know, convenient for the players and, you know, the rooms and hotel and everything
great
right
there.
Great
for the fans.
Great
too.
For the fans. And, but the desert has always been a destination, you know, people from Chicago or St. Louis or, you know, cold weather, you know, to come at this time of year to get out of the cold and to come and all tennis fans and, you know, warm weather fans to come and, and be a part of it. So, the desert has really benefited from that financially too. Then they changed from La Quinta over to another spot where they built a stadium. Then they outgrew that, so now where they are it's an amazing spot. It really is. I mean, it's more than tennis, Brad. I mean, it is a destination. You go there and you sit outside, and there's food, there's a bar,
bands.
Nobu, a steakhouse. They've got anything and everything you want to go and to spend the day there. You know, whether you're a tennis fan or you're not, it's a good hang.
Yeah.
And then if you happen to see some good tennis along the way, that's even better.
Yeah.
You know, but it's become more than just, you know, a tennis tournament and Larry Ellison, you know, who has taken it over, has really had a very good vision. You know, for that and what he's turned it into. And you know, the people that are drawn to the event. And, you know, that to me is, you know, what we tried to do back in the 70s and 80s. We tried to get people who weren't really tennis fans into the game and to be a part of it. And you know, whether you were sitting there watching tennis or just, you know, around it and you know, supporting it was good enough. And he's done one hell of a job at that. And, you know, they were talking about him being the fifth Grand Slam.
Right.
You know, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, every dime he makes, he puts back into that tournament, into that event to make it bigger and better than it was in 2023 for 2024.
Yeah.
2025 is going to be bigger than this year.
Right.
And I mean, too bad we don't have more owners of tournaments that are like him.
Right.
Which we'd have had him back in my day. It would have been great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you definitely can see that he cares about the game too. You know, it's not like some, you know, thing he has in his portfolio just to make money. He loves tennis and, you know, is friends with a lot of the players and all that stuff. It's fun, man. It's Graham, my buddy I grew up with, his parents live right down the street. So they always go. And I talk to a lot of people who, you know, might not be huge tennis fans, but they usually go out. Are you going to go out to Indian Wells? Yeah, we're going out for a day and we're going, you know, for the weekend. We're doing something one night. We're going to the tennis the next. And
yeah, but the hang in Palm Springs, even after the tennis, you know, the restaurants and you know, and for us now, I mean,
the golf,
right. So we went and spent an hour at the tennis and went and played golf and went to the restaurants in the evening. And,
for us,
you know, it's a great day. It's a full day, you know, of getting our little fix, but then getting our major fix on the golf course and the dinners and things. So, like I said, it's a good hang, you know, on a daily basis. I mean, they've got shops to buy clothes and, you know, anything and everything that you want there. And
the fan experience is good. Like you're close, you know, you got the lawn where people play soccer, hang out and players, you know, walking through, signing a lot of autographs, posing for pictures. It's a fan friendly event, you know, and it's got a great setting and everything. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready to eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started now and get after those goals. 2 minute meals. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. There's no prep, no meal mess. I love that part. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, no cooking, or cleaning up needed. Flexible for your schedule? Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. I like that. Sometimes I go out of town, sometimes I need to pause my Factor, and they're always happy to help me. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Here's my favorite part. Head to factormeals.com/Connors50 and use code Connors50 to get 50% off. That's a lot. That's code Connors50 at factormeals.com/Connors50 to get 50% off. Did you see the news about Halep?
I did.
Yeah. Simona Halep.
Yeah.
WTA Grand Slam winner. Had been dealing with her suspension. I think it was like a 3-year suspension over some, I guess it was a tainted test with, you know, her supplements had something tainted in it that, you know, the Martoglu team had given her and blah, blah, blah. So whatever, it played out. She had her appeal. And it seems like what happens with every tennis player who gets banned and appeals, it either gets reduced or, you know, thrown out
right.
altogether.
Right.
And so I just wanted to get your take on that because I know we're Halep fans here and have talked about it a little bit in the past.
I mean, everybody's so quick to jump to all the conclusions, I guess. And just like Rublev, you know, getting defaulted, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago. And they're so quick to jump you know, and you know, had somebody come out of the stands and said, you know, I'm snitching.
I guess technically he was on the court. We took some shit. They said our credibility took a hit.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do with my credibility.
Because he said it was someone from the back instead of the like far corner lines guy on the other side.
Excuse me.
Either way, he narked.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, Halep, is she the only one? I mean, you know, who else are they testing?
Yeah.
Who else are they trying to find? You know, you just, you know, go from one to the other, or you test everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the rules are for that, but I will say, and I go back into 91. I mean, I remember playing matches at the U.S. Open, you know, when I was 39, and I had to stay in there for 3 hours to, you know, to
muster up a PP.
Yeah. You know, to give my sample. They obviously, they were thinking, well, a guy, you know, guy 39 can't be doing this. He's got to be on something.
Right.
You know, what the hell is he doing?
Right.
You know, what the hell? I mean, you know, can somebody be in shape and have the drive and the ambition and the sacrifice and the motivation and the discipline and everything to go out and want to be as good as he can be at 39, right, like he was at 25?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jesus. But if you look at it that way, then somebody's going to go under the radar.
Right.
You know.
There's always going to be somebody.
Somebody, right.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is like I don't know enough about all the chemicals exactly that she tested positive for, but, the old saying is the cheaters are always ahead of the testing, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, if you look at the history of tennis, the amount of people who have been popped for PEDs is pretty low. And then the actual names associated with it are also like not that, you know, biggest names.
Right.
And so you're telling me,
but she's
like
the biggest name today.
One of them. Yeah. She's got a Sharapova, maybe the other one.
Yeah, but she was about done anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so you're telling me in the whole sport, like, you know, with all the testing and all the stuff that they do, that there's just these couple small, like lower level-y people that are cheating. Like
right.
When you know it's probably prevalent in every athletic division. Fighting and basketball and football and baseball and just everything where they're probably doing stuff.
Well, I'm not making any predictions or whatever, but I guess that's what's happened because tennis has become a part of the Olympics, right?
Right. They're part of the UADA or whatever it is,
right.
Testing.
Well,
but I thought it was funny too, because like, so Martoglu kind of came forward and said, you know, it was his fault or his team, whatever. They did something that led to it, which was part of the appeals process, I think. But he's coaching now. He's back with Holger Rune, which, you know, we had on to talk about Boris in December. And, you know, we talked that ended and all that stuff. So he's back with Rune. And I saw somebody on Twitter, like, tweeted, like, hey, make sure he doesn't mix any of your drinks, you know, to Rune. And then Rune replied. He's like, oh, don't worry. Like, my mom takes care of all of that. You know, she'll look out for me.
Step in there, mom.
Yeah.
moms take good care of their boys. I know that for a fact.
I just don't want anything to happen with him just because, like, you know, he was like, Martoglu can go ahead and say that, but it hasn't affected him negatively like it did Halep. Like,
right.
Halep has had to miss this last, whatever it is, year and a half now. And her name has this, you know, whatever you want to say next to it, having to go through it. And so and he just moves on to another player. And it's just like,
it's going to be interesting to see how that has affected her, Brett. You know, that time away and, you know, that weighing on her mentally, you know, and how she comes back. And, you know, I guess everybody looks at it differently, but, you know, that drive and that get even. You know, kind of thing.
Got to be eager. She's got to be chomping at the bit.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that.
God.
That, I mean, it's too bad she couldn't get in Indian Wells, but they're giving her a wild card to Miami. So she's going to be playing in 10 days, two weeks. We'll be able to see her.
Yeah.
Which will be cool.
It's going to be interesting to see. You know, I mean, she's been gone a long time. I mean, practice, you know what I say about practice. There's nothing like playing those matches. No matter what you do on the practice court and whatever, it leads up. But those matches are what counts. And, you know, she's been away for a while. So it's going to...
Might take her a little bit.
Take her a while to get her legs underneath her. And you know, I hope not. I hope she just fits right in there and comes back and starts playing. But it's going to be fun to watch her and you know, her attitude and the eagerness that she has to get back and try to be on top.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of hers. And so, like, I'm looking forward to seeing her come back, hopefully. And then she can play the rest of her career and go out the way she wants to instead of having this sort of, you know, kind of thing hanging over her head. Don't want to keep us too long here because I'm getting up early. I'm going out to Death Valley.
Yeah, you're taking a road trip.
With Melina, not Bella. I'm dropping Bella off. They don't allow golden doodles out there.
I think we got a visitor for the next couple of days.
Yep, you got a buddy.
The golden doodle staying with us.
Bogey's sister. So I don't want to keep you too long, but we could talk a little bit of the odds, you know, for Indian Wells coming up. And Djokovic is playing for the first time since 2019, I think. Nadal had to pull out. which was kind of interesting. Yeah. Did you see that? He was well enough to play the Netflix event in Vegas, but I guess not well enough to play in Indian Wells.
Well, you know that.
Netflix and chill.
Yeah. You know, you go through, you stop in Vegas and, you know, get a little competition and probably get a big check along the way, you know, and just to figure out if you're healthy enough to go and play against, you know, guys, you know, for real.
Right.
You know, I mean, as much as you want to talk about exhibitions and things like that, it's not for real. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, let's face it, I mean, he's come to a point in his career where, you know, his health is something worth looking at every week.
Yeah.
Compare him to Tiger a little bit. You know, Tiger entered the tournament at Riviera and, you know, and tries to go out and play and then gets sick the next day. And, you know, you enter and you pull out. And I'm saying from experience, Brett, that, you know, when you get older, things don't come as easy to you. I mean, everybody knows that. And so you've got to work harder and you got to train harder. And you go out and you think you can play your normal game. And, you know, let's face it, you know, Rafa put an awful lot of effort into his style.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it was said from the very beginning with him, you know, shit, how long is he going to last? You know, he can't play that long, you know, because I got that same thing. You know, he's too little. He's too small. He's got a two-handed backhand, you know.
He's going to burn himself out.
He's going to burn himself. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, when you play for 20 years, and I think that's about the time that Rafa's played, he's played about 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually shit happens.
Right.
You know, and but it's, you know, and it's interesting because I knew, I mean, the last year that I played after the 91 U.S. Open, I played one more year and I shouldn't have. But I was chasing such a dollar. And I keep saying that because people after that were just throwing money at me. You know, nothing like today, but shit, your mommy said, I'll see you in 45 weeks.
Right. Well, then it must have been hard too, because you played all those years where the money wasn't that good. And then all of a sudden now at the end of your career, you're seeing these big money. Yeah. You're like, I'm not turning that down.
No, I mean.
But I don't think that's what it is with Rafa.
No, it's not.
Right.
You know, that was my next line that, you know, things have changed with that. I mean, the amount of money they're playing for now and surely the amount of money that he's made. He's not playing for the money.
No.
You come back and you play because you love the game and you love the competition and you love everything that goes with trying to win, you know, every time you walk out there, you know, and his, you know, competitiveness has always been at the very top.
Right.
Then, you know, when things start happening, you know, the aches and pains and so forth like that, it takes away from, you know, you pushing yourself to, you know, to try to mentally reach that pinnacle.
It takes more to like get yourself up,
right?
Mentally, physically, everything,
recovering.
Right. I mean, I have a feeling he had that obligation for Netflix and he was good enough to obviously play an exhibition, whether or not, you know, maybe pick something up there or just aggravated something, or he just knows, look, I'm not good, you know, and it's just.
I still think that he's preparing for the French.
For the clay.
And for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, you know, that when he goes and he finds his stride going into those events, that he's healthy.
Yeah.
And he's able to go and compete and at the level that he wants to. And then walking away is tough. So tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, you see some football players that, you know, that are retiring and they're sitting there and, you know, these guys that are 300 pounds and they're sitting there and they're crying.
Right.
You know, I don't want to go. Shit, I was happy to go.
Yeah.
you know, I said, I've had enough, you know, but walking away.
Yeah, but you had a senior tour to go to.
I did. Yes,
they need
I did.
An NFL senior tour.
Yeah. Yes, I did. But it's tough to do,
yeah.
You know, to leave what you've been so good at and created such interest in, and, you know, the people that you brought in and the excitement that you brought to the game and the sponsors you brought in and the fans you brought in,
mm-hmm.
and the money you brought in, you know, all of that. I mean, it's tough to look around and say, shit, it's over. You know, I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough day.
Yeah, because you've had your head down for so long. Just go next day, next tournament, next practice, next whatever meal to, you know, treatment on your whatever, your body. But yeah, it's the other thing that's you don't realize is when you see Tiger pull the ripcord and has to pull out, or Nadal pulls out, it seems like, oh, he only played a round or he only played the exhibition in practice. But like they've probably been grinding and practicing, yeah, and, you know, doing all this stuff behind the scenes. And then they come and they get there and they realize, I got to shut it down. Right. You know what I mean? I can't do it.
Like we always say, playing the real thing is different from the practice.
Right.
And, you know, once you get in and know that you've got to chase that one extra ball down, or, you know, you've got to hit that one 260-yard three wood to get to the green, mm-hmm, and your body just not giving it to you and all that. It, mentally that weighs on you.
Right.
And, it's tough because you see the greatness, Tiger and Rafa. I mean, the greatness that they've produced is pretty special. And, you know, we as fans hate to see them go.
Yeah.
They've given shit, you know, watching Tiger, you know, like I said the other day, you know, having Tiger in a tournament just makes the tournament better.
More interesting.
Yeah, more interesting, yeah. You know, and it's the same with Rafa.
Yeah.
You know, him in the tournament, you know, so for me as a fan, I'm getting cheated now.
That's what I saw too, is when, you know, he put out the thing, hey, I got to pull out. I'm sorry. It's one of my favorite places. You know, you read so many of those from so many players and even him. He has had so many injuries the last few years. But then I stopped and thought, been like, he might not, that might be the last time he comes to Indian Wells.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This might be his last year and nobody knows for sure. But like every time he doesn't play an event, then he might not come back. When you look at it like that, it's kind of a little sad. You know, you're like, oh shit. Like, you know, I might not ever get a chance to see him in the desert. And then with every event that gets closer to the French in the Olympics, like we've, you know, kind of talked about.
A lot of people that go to the desert to see him live.
Right.
You know, now, you know, might be the last time they see, yeah, live, you know, right. Forget about seeing him on TV or whatever, but, you know, live is something special too.
Oh yeah.
It's the same with Tiger. Yeah. It's the same with all athletes, you know, and it's funny, you know, everybody's sitting back there going, he's getting a little older. He's not up to what he should be. You know, maybe he should stop and maybe he shouldn't play as, you know, everybody's back there saying,
right,
retire, get, you know, you've had
like
enough.
We were saying with Murray too.
Right. Yeah. Same with Murray.
Like just a little different version of it.
Yeah. But it's the same, but it's funny. Nobody tells a doctor, nobody tells a lawyer, nobody tells a politician.
Right.
Hey, you're getting a little old. You're 97 years old.
Right.
Don't you think you better, you know,
step aside
for a minute.
Yeah.
And nobody says that. It's only athletes.
And then they're all telling them to leave, push them aside. And then the minute they leave, oh, I miss her.
Right.
Oh, I wish she was back.
100%. 100%.
All right. I just want to go, how about we look at some of the odds?
Okay.
Okay. You tell me what you're thinking. Joker at the top, +175, almost 2-1. Our guy Sinner, 3-1. Last year's champ, Carlitos, 4-1. Last year's finalist, Medvedev, 8-1. And then there's a pretty big fall off. It seems like those four are the guys week in and week out where people can see them, like, you know, contending, right, winning. Then you get Zverev, 25. Demon Hour, who won last week in Acapulco. He's been one of the best players on the tour.
Yeah, who
this
did he
year.
Beat in the finals? He beat...
I can't remember. Yeah. Like Rude. Was it Rude?
Yeah.
I think it was Rude.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, let me see. Hold on.
They give you the top four, and then the drop off goes
to Rude.
Yeah.
So 4-4.
Goes to Demon Hour, goes to Zverev, to,
let's see who else we got. Fritz won there a couple years ago at 40-1. Mm-hmm. Rublev 40, Hubie 50, Runa 50,
Ugo.
Yeah, 50 is not a bad number.
Runa.
Yeah.
Oh.
He played all right. He got to the semis last week. You feel like he's still kind of like building, figuring it out. Once he gets up and running, he's going to be like, you know,
right,
back going. Shelton, 50-1.
He's got the game.
Yeah.
You know, when we talked to him, you know, that it impressed me when he was on our podcast that, you know, talking to him that he's willing to almost do anything, you know, to try to be the best,
mm-hmm,
you know, no matter what it takes, the work ethic or whatever. And geez, at 50-1, that might be...
That's worth a little fiver. Worth a little fiver.
I might have to come out of retirement again.
Oh, no, not again. I thought, because like some of the talk about him is maybe he's immature, you know, this
he's
and that.
He's 20.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But I got the opposite. I thought, wow, he's super mature.
Yeah.
Like the way he looks at all this and... He's happy that Joker's still around so he can learn from them and play against the best so he knows what it's like. And so I think he's just trying to figure it out. Like,
but he
also
has no fear, Bretter.
Yeah.
You know, he's not afraid to play those guys, no matter who it is. And to me, you know, that's pretty important when you know, you go out there and no matter who you play.
Your pet's a member of the family. Don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. Here on Advantage Connors, we're lucky enough to have a mascot. You know her, Golden Doodle Isabella. We love her. She's been a part of the family for over 5 years now, and she is our mascot. And recently, we have switched her food to Nom Nom. Yep, I was feeding her the store-bought kind of kibble for the first 4.5 years of her life, and then recently made the switch. I'm on a test basis to Nom Nom, and let's just say we have not looked back. She loves it. Nom Nom delivers freshly made dog food with every portion personalized to your dog's needs, so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom's made with real, wholesome ingredients you can see and recognize without any additives or fillers that contribute to bloating and low energy. That's because Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real good food for dogs. Their nutrient-packed recipes are designed by board-certified veterinary nutritionists, freshly made and shipped free to your front door. Nom Nom's already delivered over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours and Isabella, inspiring millions of clean bowls and tail wags. That's what we also love, too, is the people at Nom Nom worked with us, took into account how old Isabella was, how much she weighed, what her activity level was, and they sent her the perfect meal sizes, and she loves it. The meals are proportioned, perfect for her size and her appetite. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your first order. No fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom. All right, here's the best part, guys. Go right now for 50% off your no-risk, two-week trial at trynom.com/Connors. That's my favorite song, baby. Spelled trynom.com/Connors for 50% off. trynom.com/Connors for 50% off, baby.
You know what the next best thing to playing and winning is?
Playing and losing.
Playing and losing. and I say that because, you know, he goes out there and he'll give it everything he has and then learn from his mistakes and his losses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, these guys now have 6-7 guys around them.
Yeah.
Take notes.
Full team.
Full team.
Yeah.
Take notes. Help me out here. You know, you're sitting in there. You can see.
Give me some strategies. Tell me the things I can't see because I'm too close to it.
Exactly. He's the one down there trying to do it.
Yeah.
You need somebody with the extra set of eyes up above. That's what Pancho was for me. That's what your grandma was for me. You know, I'd walk off there and they never let me get to the locker room without telling me, you should have done this. You should have been doing this. You played great, but.
Yeah.
Always a buildup.
And then a butt.
And then a butt. Right.
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 Want you to feel good, but then there's always something you can get better at.
Can get better at. This is exactly right.
And then same thing on the women's side. Top four. You got Iga 3-1, Sabi 3.5, last year's champ, Rybakina 6-1, and Coco 6.5. And then it goes Pagula 25, my girl Yelena Ostapenko 28. And goes down from
Pagula,
there.
Pagula, she's been a, you know, we liked her on the show for a long time. What's holding her back?
I mean, she has times where she's, you know, one of the best players in the world. You know, like she wins big tournaments and it's just this year she's been a little slow off the start. It's just the same kind of thing. We're waiting for her to kind of break through that quarterfinal level at a slam. She's yet to make a semi. But she's got the game. I mean, she moves well. She's good on both sides. You know, she's good at net. She's a good doubles player. You know, when she plays doubles, she has success. Yeah, I mean, I still believe that she's got, you know, a big, big win in her mm-hmm. career. I think it just, you know, the right set of circumstances need to happen and the draw fall her way or whatever. But here's one last thing I want to talk about. I've seen it all over social media. All the people, as soon as they got there and were given the balls to go practice on the court, we kind of talked about it, but it seems like absurd at how bad of an issue it is. I saw Stan put it up first, Wawrinka. He put a picture of a new ball, a new pin ball, the ones they're giving them to use, that they're using at the tournament. And then there was one next to it that he said had maybe been used for like 2 rallies, you know, like boom, you know, a couple minutes for pretty much. And the one looked brand new, all slick. You know, and the felt's all down. And then the one next to it looks like me when I wake up in the morning and my hair is just like, you know what I mean?
I've seen that, Joe.
You know what that looks like. It's just like all of a sudden it's already huge. It's already poofed up and heavy. And we always talk about this. Indian Wells has some of the slowest, grittiest courts.
Right.
That's our favorite buzzword these 2 weeks, right. Gritty. So if you start matching the gritty quartz with a ball that does that, it almost like feeds into more of it, right? Where it's going to even be super slow.
But isn't that what they wanted though? I mean, they made, you know, the quartz from the French to Wimbledon to Australia to the US Open, you know, to Indian Wells, all about the same. Mm. You know, the same bounce, the same, almost the same pace, the, you know, so it, you know, should benefit all the players, you know, so, you know, now all of a sudden they want a ball that's not so heavy, you know, to what, so the rallies aren't as long?
I guess now that it's become so bad that it's starting to take its toll on the players.
Well,
like shoulders and elbows and wrists.
Now they're worrying about it. They didn't worry about it 50 years ago.
Right.
You know, what's going on? But, I mean, I play with some of these balls and, you know, at the pace I play, it's not even like playing tennis anymore. But I go out and I hit on the clay courts and with these balls. And, you know, after 5 or 10 minutes, I mean, you can't miss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
well, no. What do you mean? Because it's so big looking? Or
I mean, it's just, you know, the ball, I mean, it takes, you know, for me, it takes more effort.
To get it through the court.
To get it through the court. But I mean, it feels like I can just, you know, give it and swing and shoot as deep as I want. And I don't play the topspin with the strings and all that.
Right.
And,
you're flat.
And it feels like I can't miss.
Does it feel heavier too on the strings?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can feel the extra effort that I'm putting into it. And, you know, but I mean, you know, fuck, I'm 71 for Christ's sake. And, you know, it's a different game for me now. But, you know, with the string and the rackets and everything like that, I guess it, you know, I've never played with that, but I guess with the courts and all that, that's the option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what happens if you have a ball that flies?
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's a lighter ball that you know, that they can't control as much.
Just think about how silly kind of it is that, like, because golf has the same issue, right? They've wanted to pull the reins in on the golf ball technology. Yeah. That's been a big topic the last couple of years. But you're pretty much playing the same ball wherever you tee up. Maybe they have like some sort of tweak, but you know, if you're playing a Pro V100, probably playing a Pro V100 everywhere, right. You know? But with tennis, every event has a different ball.
That's what's crazy to me.
Sometimes there's like, you know, where we're using the AO balls or we're using the Roland Garros ball. So some of the tournaments leading up or after might have the same balls. But the fact that it's this topic where it's like, you know, literally every week when they're practicing, there's pictures of players complaining about the ball or saying something about the ball. And
well, it's affecting their health, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, they're you know, my generation was mostly below the waist, your hips and your knees and your ankles and, you know, and things like that. Now, you know, with the rackets and the strings, how light they are, and with the balls as heavy, you know, it's their arm, their shoulder, their elbow, their neck,
their wrist,
their back.
Yeah, like Delpo and Team.
Yeah,
the
I
wrists.
Mean, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens down the road with a lot of these guys who have a 20-year career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they last that long, you know, with the balls that are that heavy.
Well, it seems like they've almost made all the balls like almost like a clay court ball where like the ball puffs up because it, you know, gets in these longer rallies and then the hardcore rallies become longer because you're using a ball and you're, you know what I mean? You're almost like, what came first, chicken or egg, or you know what I mean? Like, what's happening here?
But that isn't that what they wanted though?
I mean, I guess.
It seems like all the events wanted it as almost a European, South American clay court kind of game.
Well, I remember them wanting to change Wimbledon. Growing up, I remember like when Wimbledon had gotten like with the big servers, like Ivanisevic and Stieg and these guys, it was so quick. There were no rallies at Wimbledon. And then the court would get so chewed up, remember, and then right. Before they changed the grass. So I remember it being a conversation like, hey, at Wimbledon, they would like to like change the style of tennis. But it seems like that maybe spread to the whole tour.
Yeah.
In a way,
seems
right?
Seems like it.
Like we're like literally every event is for the most part trying to cater to longer rallies, you know, longer, you know, more hitting, more baseline, you know, harder to get through the court, which like is just going to take, it might be better points and more setup and longer rallies, more fun for the fans, but it's probably beating the shit out of these poor players' arms.
Take the pain.
Which is just a weird thing where it's like, it's there is no one ball. So it's constantly in flux, you know? And then week to week.
That seems to be what's crazy is they change balls every week or every couple of weeks or whatever. And there's never any rhythm.
Right.
You know, that you can find with that.
Well, I wonder, is there going to come a time where certain players see what kind of ball is being used and pull out of the event?
Well,
or I'm not playing that event or using that ball. It's too heavy. It rips my elbow up every time we use it.
Well, don't you have an association that's supposed to stick up for you and do that stuff? I don't know. And there are players.
Yeah, I guess.
Tennis have a commissioner yet?
But then they have all these different sponsors, you know, this pin and that kind, you know, Wilson and different balls. Yeah. And the beat goes on.
And I sit here at our dinner table and, you know, happy to talk about it instead of being out there playing it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you're playing. We played with Richie.
Yeah.
Our boy Richie. Yeah. He was on here with us a year ago.
Yep. I get I get my exercise every day. But any questions, any good questions come to our Facebook?
Yeah, we'll see. What do we got? Hold on. Let me see.
We got about another five or six minutes or so before
sleepy time.
Before sleepy time, right.
Let's see if I can find something here.
I hope the golf courses dry out in the next couple of days. I mean, we've had so much rain. I'd love to get out there, and I found something in my swing, chipping and putting in my living room.
Yeah.
You know, I've knocked a couple of paintings off the wall, but so far your mom hasn't seen that.
This caught my eye, and it made me feel good. Michael Cook,
mm-hmm.
follower, listener,
mm-hmm.
Fan of your Facebook page.
Thank you, Michael.
Said that he just wanted to say that he has been battling stage 4 cancer.
Oh.
And that our show and that your Facebook page and watching old clips of you has kind of helped him as he's had to deal with this stuff with his health. And I thought that was pretty cool. Out of all the things we've done on this podcast, you know, whatever it's all about, like reading that comment made everything worth it.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no. Thanks, Michael, for tuning in and being a part of what we do. We're thinking about you, and we know that going through what you are having to deal with is not easy. And keep listening, because you know we're here every week, and we want you to tune in and be a part of what we do. And you know, send in some questions. Send in what you want to talk about and your feelings and so forth. And we're willing to talk about it. And, you know, as I sit here, I cannot say that I know what you're going through, but I have had cancer in my family, dating way back. My grandfather and my dad and my mom and even my wife Patty, you know, have dealt with that. And you know, being positive and staying in there and fighting hard and giving it all you have. I know you are, and I just want you to know that, you know, we'll be thinking about you every day and praying for you, and you stay in touch with us and let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, well said. Thanks for following and supporting, and keep up the good work and hang in there. Keep grinding.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Perfect.
You got room for any more?
Let her rip.
This one
more good one.
This one says, how did you deal with raising a family and being on the road so much?
Yo.
Since this is a family-oriented podcast.
Family-oriented. You're right. Well, actually, starting out was kind of easy, but it became very difficult, and I say that because Brett, you came around very quickly, and was just your mommy and I on the road, and then all of a sudden, you know, when you were born, it was you and me and your mom and a nanny and 14 bags,
right?
You know, going through airports and you know taking your. You know, your food,
stroller, and
just
diapers.
Everything. But the whole thing was, is, you know, we didn't, you know, want you to come in and then all of a sudden just leave you at home. We wanted you to be with us and travel with us and be a part of it. The difficult thing was that, for a couple of years was that when I was with my family, I thought I was sliding the tennis. And then when I was with practicing and working and playing the tennis, I thought I was sliding my family. So that was the the tough part of the judgment. And it took me a couple of years to get that. But over the course of those couple of years, I didn't win a Grand Slam. I was in the semis of everything and, you know, was still winning 5 or 6 tournaments, 7 tournaments a year. But, you know, everybody thought, well, he's finished. He's over. It's done. You know, so now I was fighting that too. So, but once I got the mixture right of family and the tennis and, you know, not to burn myself out and to spend the time with the family and how to deal with both of them, then I felt more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that when I was gone and sometimes, you know, when you were little, Brad, I mean, you know, I wasn't leaving for a week or a two, I was leaving for 10 or 12 weeks at a time. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, which is, you know, for a new dad, you know, that's hard, that, you know, it's hard for any new dad.
Yeah.
But your mom was, you know, was so good. And, you know, with you and dealing with me on the phone too. And
yeah, you would always call.
Yeah.
You'd call us before we went to school, no matter where you were in the world. And then you'd call us before we went to bed. So.
Yeah. But once I got the mixture right, I was okay. But it was an interesting couple of years.
I think that's relatable though, too, because I feel like in life, you'll have these decisions or these choices where you have to go one way. And when you go one way, you're not going another way. So like you have those moments where you feel like you're going to let someone or something down, right? Either way. If I say yes to this, I'm saying no to that,
right.
You know? And so I think it's relatable, you know? Like I have those moments too where I'm like, you know, dad wanted me to go hit balls with him, but Melina wants me to go to Starbucks and help her with a resume. I'm going to say no to one person, you know? Like, oh, I don't want to let dad down.
Right.
I mean, that's a small example, but I think a lot of people can understand it.
No, but it's interesting when, you know, when I would come home, I'd be gone for a number of weeks and I would come home and I'd say, oh boy, I'm home. And you would, you know, look at me and say, oh boy, dad's home. You know, mom, I'll give you a break. And dad, I want to go get ice cream. Dad, let's go to a movie. Dad, let's go do this.
Yeah.
And I'm going. And so your mom said, put up her hand and said, you're going to have to wait just a moment.
Give him a second.
Yeah. He says, you're going to have to step back. He says, if you're going to come home, he says, you're going to have to fit in,
right.
You know, which was true, you know, to the program.
Right.
You know, that
the routine and everything.
Yeah. You were in school. You were playing soccer. You were doing this. You had your daily routine. You had your homework. You had all of that. And, you know, I'm coming home and it's like, you know, party time.
Right.
You know, and that's the way you looked at it too.
And you want it to be that way too, because you've been gone and you miss and you want to get caught up on all the stuff that's been happening without you.
Yeah. Your mom put the brakes on that in a hurry.
I think we got ice cream. We still want to get ice cream enough.
Yeah, it just was a little later.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good, Brett. But, you know, as always, you can follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter and Brett at Brett_Connors on Twitter. Follow me on my Facebook.
Yep.
And keep
giving us questions, topics.
Yeah, please.
Links.
Yeah, love
Give
hearing
us all your
from
Indian
you.
Wells stuff this week going on. Let us know what you think.
And send in for next week. Tell us who you like and who you're picking. You know, that we want to know and why. Yeah, you know, and don't hold back on us, because you know we're not afraid to give our opinion too.
Right.
Waiting to hear from you.
Yep. Sounds good, Pops. I love you. We're gonna head out to Death Valley for a couple days, and we'll check in with you all next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.